If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 767. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about dolphins and boulders, fairy pools and fairy doors, waterfalls, and a hole in a rock as we go to the New Zealand Northland. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about New Zealand. I'd like to welcome to the show Heather Markell from heatherbegins.com. And Heather has come to talk to us about New Zealand. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. So excited to be here.
And what is your connection with New Zealand? You're in New Zealand now, although your trip there has been a little longer than perhaps anticipated.
Indeed. I've been a full-time traveler for several years. And in February 21st of 2020, I landed here, zipped around the South Island thinking it would be like a three-week trip before heading off to Australia. And then the pandemic was declared, and then I ended up being locked down here. And I'm 2 weeks shy of my 1.5-year anniversary in New Zealand.
Got it. And why should someone go to New Zealand? Not just to avoid the pandemic. So
yeah, really. Well, you can't get in now anyway, but would be a stellar reason. But I think there's a lot of reasons. I mean, first off, I don't know if you ever saw the Disney film Moana, but I didn't know at the time that there's some talk that it may be based on New Zealand. And coming here and seeing these landscapes that reminded me a little bit of the Moana film, and just it's so ungodly beautiful. It's insane. Also, because I've traveled a lot in the world, experiencing lots of different indigenous cultures, learning about the Maori people and how I think they've made it a little bit better than a lot of how other indigenous peoples are treated in other countries. Mm-hmm. And learning about that culture here is really fascinating. And then just that people here are so kind and helpful. I mean, I've been so deeply touched by how out of the way people have gone for me, but that's just how they are. It's not just me. It's just an amazing people.
Excellent. Now, this is not the first show that we have done on New Zealand after 16 years. So what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
I'm actually going to recommend an itinerary in the north. The Northland, it's the north of the North Island of New Zealand, which is an area that I really think people miss, especially a lot of the guidebooks and advice is to go to the South Island. And I know that when I was there for a few weeks, I felt like I mean, it's gorgeous. You should go, but it is a bit like a tourist circuit. Whereas up here in the north, it's not as highly touristed, and it feels more authentic and laid back. Interestingly, up in the North Island, there's also a lot more Maori people. And I learned that's because of the weather. Basically, they chose the North Island versus the South Island because the weather is less harsh up here. And in fact, the itinerary I'm talking about, what's really nice about it is it's an all year round itinerary, but especially if you want to come to New Zealand at a probably a less touristy time, which would be their winter, the Northland actually is much warmer. So you don't have to deal with those extreme temperatures, snow, all that stuff. Although actually, sorry, it did snow here yesterday on the west coast of the North Island, which is like unheard of. But all in all, it's a much warmer climate up here too.
Yeah, you mentioned the Maori people were predominantly in North Island. I'm trying to remember how many different groups there were, and I don't remember whether tribe was the right designation, but different clans or whatever there were. And I want to say there were like 12 and only one of them was in the South Island, something along those lines, as I recall.
I've spoken with a few different people and they've told me about their beautiful tattoos and how it connects them to their family. And what I've understood is that each, if you want to say tribe, has like you have to have a very special training in the tattoos because there are in fact hundreds of them. And so it's each one has its own lineage and symbols. So I think it, I don't know if it's 12 or 13, but I understood actually there were hundreds.
Excellent. Well, where are we going to start? I assume we're going to start in Auckland.
Yes. So what I would recommend is flying into Auckland and then you can fly up to Kerikeri. If you don't fly, the bus ride or the driving is roughly 4 to 5 hours. So it's doable, but you can also fly into Kerikeri, but you can't, if you are flying up, you must transit via Auckland, which is why I'd recommend just start there, fewer flights. So you could do all this in roughly 10 days, but I'd say if you could do 2 weeks, it would be, you'd be a little bit more relaxed. But so I'd say come up to Kerikeri and spend a few days here because there is so much to see and I'll go into that. And if you use it as a base for part of the traveling, it's a great place to do that. That itinerary from Kerikeri would I'd also include part of the west coast of the North Island. And then I would go up towards Cape Rinya, making a bunch of stops along the way that are beautiful. And once you see Cape Rinya, come back down, possibly spend a night in Pahia or Russell as you head down the Tutukaka coast down into Whangarei, spend a couple days in Whangarei, and then exit via Auckland.
Excellent. Well, let's get started then. You started us with Kerikeri.
Yes.
Which is interesting. So you've already skipped over the most touristed part of the Northlands, which is Whangarei.
Whangarei, yeah, that's where I would end, but that's, yeah.
What I said it with some hesitation because for those of you who don't know, who aren't looking at a map, it starts with WH.
Yes.
Which is an F sound, so.
I speak 6 languages, so I really like to learn local languages when I travel, and I have tried to learn a little bit of Maori. I've been looking for like a teacher or program. It hasn't quite happened. So I've made friends here and there teach me a little. But honestly, the best teacher was the library book I took out recently for kids. Like taught me a little bit about the sounds. But yeah, WH is the F sound. And so if you hear us talking during the show about something that's like Whangarei, and I'm going to talk about Wharepuke, that's a WH at the beginning. Absolutely.
Right. So, but you skipped over that and went up to Kerikeri. Tell me more about Kerikeri.
When I came up here, as I said, the pandemic had been declared and I thought they told me this, the Bay of Islands was really nice. And the only two towns I knew of up here were Pahia and Kerikeri. And being that there was a pandemic, I thought, well, I should be around fewer people. Pahia seems a bit touristy. Let me try Kerikeri. That's kind of how I ended up here. And I'm really happy with my choice. It is indeed. It's like a real town as opposed to a touristy town. Mm-hmm. When you first get here, like the bus stop, I got dropped off in front of the library. So there's no bus station. I don't know if you're familiar with Chris Booth. He's actually a renowned world sculptor.
No, I don't think so.
He has done a lot of sculptures in New Zealand. And I'll talk about another of his sculptures in the itinerary. But he's very well known here, obviously, but he's also known in the world. He even has a sculpture in Whangarei, two of them there. And he actually lives in Kerikeri. I've met him. He's lovely. And one of his sculptures is right by the library. So you kind of arrive into this town with the library and this enormous sculpture. And there you are in Kerikeri. And the downtown is like 3 blocks long. And you think, I wonder what's going on here. And then the longer I've been here, the more that I'm like, there's so much to see and do here. And it's beautiful. It's relaxed. There's a big retirement community here. But a lot of Aucklanders are starting to move up to Kerikeri. And in fact, I know that people who live in Kerikeri don't want the secret out of the bag, right? Because it's this great place, but it keeps growing because it is so beautiful. So the Kerikeri Inlet is where the first settlers first met the Maori people. And the reason that this area was sought after was because I mentioned that warmer climate. The soil is great for growing things. The plants, the trees, the nature here is incredible, as it is on all of New Zealand. But there's a lot of kiwi fruit orchards. Oh, by the way, side note, it's very important that we call it kiwi fruit and not kiwi.
Because the kiwis are the people.
They're the people and the birds. And the birds. And we don't want people thinking that you're going to eat one of those.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, so there's a huge, there's a bunch of kiwi fruit orchards in Kerikeri. And if you're really lucky and you're in New Zealand, especially up here in like the March to May timeframe, you can try a red kiwi fruit. They are so new that I've met New Zealanders that have no idea what I'm talking about and have never tasted one or heard of one. And they are, as I understand it, working to be able to, I guess, freeze them somehow so that they're available all year round. But for now, just 2 months of the year, and they are delicious. So highly recommend that.
Okay.
In Kerikeri itself, there are 5 waterfalls, all of which are, so there's 2 of them that you can easily do in one day. So I mentioned, we talked about that F sound. There's Farapuke Falls and Rainbow Falls. And if you go down to the Kerikeri Inlet, which, by the way, has a wishing well, which also is, to me, any town with a wishing well, right? It's just, you got to go. And so right by that inlet, there's the Stone Store, which has a museum up top that I highly recommend seeing. And you can also from there visit the Kemp House. The Kemp House is the oldest building in New Zealand. So there's a lot of rich history right here in Kerikeri. There's a restaurant called the Plow and Feather, which is, it's now kind of pub style and it sits right on the water. So you can have a beautiful view and also eat mostly pub food. And sometimes they have like other food as well. I also recommend, if you like drinking, have a Feijoa sour. Feijoa is one of the fruit that grow up here. And I think it's originally from Brazil. And I had never tried. I didn't know they made a liqueur out of it. So if you're familiar with the pisco sour from Chile or something, this is that, but with feijoa, which is sweeter. And they have them at the Plow and Feather. I just had one the other day. They're really good. And then as you walk towards where you'd pick up the trail for the Farapuke Falls, there's also the Honey House, which is, I believe in the olden times, they actually stored honey there, but now it's a cafe, which is also lovely. There's ducks and pukeko and beautiful birds right out front that I think are used to being fed by people. And then there's this bridge that crosses over the water that's the inlet. And if you're also lucky to be here during rainy season, so right now it's winter and it's raining a lot. Up here, I've never seen in my life so many rainbows, which is another reason to come to New Zealand. The rainbows here are stunning. And last year, some friends and I came out after a storm and we saw a rainbow. And I've never in my life, we saw 4 rainbows. It was 3 separate bands, right? 3 separate bows with space in between them. And one of the rainbows did the color spectrum like back to back, purple on one side, yellow, whatever the color is in the middle. And then it was like a double band of yellow and it went all the way out through the spectrum to the right. But it was like 2 bands together. And if you're over that bridge and you can see that I have a picture of a rainbow while I'm standing at that bridge, it's just, it's so beautiful. I just don't have words for it.
And I believe the colors would be Roji Biv. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet.
Perfect. Thank you. Yes. That sounds correct. You get some of the most beautiful rainbows up here and with the scenery. I even have a picture of it behind the wishing well, you know. So, and then you can pick up, so you know, have a coffee at the Honey House, cross over this bridge, and you actually have a couple of different choices. So you can go towards that. I was talking about the waterfalls. And to the right is an area, it used to be called Rewa's Village, so it's very much about like kind of Maori culture. Mm-hmm. They've just renamed it Te Ahurea, and they built more of like a marae and it's pretty cool. So it's fairly new. So if you come after the borders open again, I imagine it will be even more robust. And there's a small museum there, and you can walk around the grounds and get some familiarity with some of the structures that are important to the Maori culture, and also learn about some of the amazing plants that are important in Maori medicine. And if you have the time, and I know this probably you won't in 2 weeks, but if you can squeeze it in, if there's a class available, highly recommend taking a class and making kawakawa balm. Kawakawa okay. is one of the plants that has a lot of wonderful medicinal properties. I've used it like on, if I get a bug bite, takes the itch right out.
Okay, kind of like aloe vera, okay.
Yeah, and you can drink the leaves if you have stomach pains, and it's just got some amazing qualities. And it's really easy to make the balm and really fun to take the class and learn about some of these plants and their properties. So, side note. But back on the track to go to the waterfall. So, again, if you cross that bridge and walk to your left, you'll soon pick up, there's a signpost that will guide you into the forest and take you onto the track over to Farapuke Falls, which is roughly, depending on how fast you walk, a 15 or 20 minute walk.
Okay.
Pretty gradual. So if you have any like walking issues, you shouldn't have a problem. And along the way you pass an old powerhouse. I think it was like the first powerhouse in the area. And kauri trees, of course, are really important in New Zealand. And kind of interestingly, the way like COVID is affecting humans, there's something called kauri dieback, which okay. is killing off the kauri trees. And apparently, if I understood from asking different people, I think it's been around for at least 30 years, but it's really sad to see, obviously, these amazing old trees that are mammoth be killed. And so when you go into a lot of these trails, you'll be asked to clean your feet off and squirt your shoes with some solution that won't harm the kauri. Now, I've heard different things, like that's the mainstream. And the when I took that kawakawa balm making class with someone who's really plugged into nature and more, I think she might be part Maori, like she felt that actually we need to expose the trees to different fungi and such so that they can actually protect themselves and build up resistance. So I'm not a scientist. I don't know which is the right answer, but just so you know that you have those two trains of thought.
Okay.
As you walk along the trail over to the Farapuke Falls, I mean, it's just a beautiful, peaceful walk that where it starts out like you've got water to your left and sort of a hill on your right, and then it opens up and there are some gorgeous trees. Two of my favorite trees are, I think they actually, it may be a fungus or something, but these trees have sort of, they're so like knotted up. They have these knotted bulbous sort of, I don't know, these okay. huge, it's just big. It's actually like maybe not the most attractive thing, but somehow that looks like there's faces in them. In fact, and I'm not the only one that as I walk by this tree and I like touch the tree, like everybody who passes by loves this tree too. So make sure that you say hello. It's like a wise old tree. And then you just walk a little bit further and you will get to the Farapuke Falls, which if you're having been here and had been lucky to be here in different seasons, it's really interesting because when you're here in the rainy season, the water is pouring over the entire falls from left to right. And if you're here at a warmer time of year, it's more, it's not a trickle of water, but much less water gushing out. So kind of neat to see it in different seasons. And then what's cool is that if you want, you can continue upwards from there and go to Rainbow Falls, which is probably another 30 to 40 minute walk. And you can just walk through the forest and you will pass some houses along the way. And then you end up at Rainbow Falls, which the way my understanding is why it's called Rainbow Falls, if you get the right lighting, the sun against the water at Rainbow Falls will make a rainbow appear.
Okay. I assumed that was the name.
Right. It took me a couple of hikes there to realize that once, if you follow this track that I'm saying, as opposed to, you could also drive to their car park. And then you're approaching the falls from up top and walking down. But if you're going the way I just recommended, you make sure you do walk up. It is a little steep in one part, but the view, there's two lookout points up top that are, they're just amazing. So to be able to look down on the falls is just magical. And then there's a tea room that I also highly recommend that you stop at. It's kind of a nice stop if you've done that whole walk to go to that tea room. Just make sure that you do check the hours, whatever time of day you're going, because a lot of things in New Zealand you're probably familiar with, like the work-life balance. They don't work like Americans do till all hours of the night. So things close, especially places that serve coffee and tea, close anywhere between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. So just make sure that you've gone on the website and check their opening hours before you plan to do that. So yeah, so that's one of the waterfall walks that I would recommend along the way. So there's something also called the fairy pools, and you can see them as you walk, do the walk from the Farapuke to the Rainbow Falls. There is an area where you can actually stop and see the Rainbow Falls from a little bit of a distance. You're a bit higher up, but if you want to see them up close, there's also, I mentioned starting out from the stone store. If you are at the stone store and you walk up past the honey house and look out on your right, there's a trail that's got ribbons tied around it, and it's got a warning about this trail is not maintained, you're at your own risk kind of thing. And what I learned is New Zealand has something called DOC, I think it's the Department of Conservation, that is responsible for maintaining a lot of these trails. This one is actually maintained by local people, and it's maintained really well. So it's just that because DOC isn't officially maintaining it, they put that warning up. You can take this little path, and it will take you all the way to Rainbow Falls up close, and then you can actually go sit in a rock and be right by the water, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Okay.
Also, so all of these waterfall walks, they start from right around the stone store, so it's cool. I mentioned the Plow and Feather restaurant. If you go a little bit up from there, there's four like Maori totem poles that welcome you. And if you walk through them and up a hill, you go down the other side, and that's how you get to the Wairere and the Secret Falls.
Now, should you be telling me this?
I know, right? The worst kept secret in the world, maybe. So you'll start by walking by fields, and you get to a point. It's kind of funny. You can choose. There's a shorter path that's a little steeper, and it warns you that if it's been raining, don't take it because it's really slippery. So if it's raining, you'll take the longer path there. If you go through the shorter path, they're all beautiful. You just go through, you're just in woods and a river by you, and it's just stunning. It's a great hike, especially if you're up here on a hotter day, because the way nature and the trees make, it's very covered. So it'll be very shady. So it's going to be a lot cooler than outside if it's sunny. Conversely, if you're up here and it's cooler, then you might want to bring an extra layer because I would expect it to be a little bit cooler in there. So the Wairere Falls it's just a really tranquil little body. It's like a small, I wouldn't call it quite a pond, but something like that, and a little waterfall. And it's just very peaceful. And you can also sit by there. And then the secret waterfall is easy to miss. And that's probably why it's called the secret waterfall. You actually have to be paying attention because it's sort of like there's a fork where you can go right to the Wairere Fall and left to the secret falls. And when you walk to the secret falls, the ground is a little bit difficult to navigate. So just be paying attention because there's tree roots and things like that. And at one angle, I swear I felt like I was looking at like an Indiana Jones scene or something from that movie. And then you get closer and it's not like that at all. But it's just a lovely smaller waterfall. And what's really nice is that you can actually, and again, find the trail that walks you up above the waterfall. And you can just follow. It's kind of neat to be at the top of it and see this calmer lake that feeds this waterfall and be able to see it from beginning to end. So that's another just a really beautiful experience. The final fall up here is called Charlie's Rock, and that's the only waterfall, that doesn't start by that stone store area.
And I have to say, every time you said stone store, I'm picturing a store that sold stones. So I had to look up what you were talking about. Oh, the oldest stone building in New Zealand, which was a granary originally, but now a store. Okay.
Yes, got it. And it's really neat to go in there. You kind of feel like you might be in the 1700s or 1800s, and they sell really cute things. And like I said, if you go upstairs, there's two levels of museum. which explains all the history of that area, how the settlers came and the Maori came and the battles that happened. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting place. And so if you're here in Kerikeri, I keep repeating it just because everybody knows where the stone store is. So if you don't and you ask someone, like, everybody knows how to point you there.
Got it.
So the Charlie's Rock you have to drive to, and the closest site that might be easy to find to navigate there is called Parrot Place. Parrot Place is an adorable bird sanctuary. Having traveled, I now am less fond of animals that are inside cages, but this one is actually quite nice. There's an aviary where the birds are flying free. There's also a section where they have the birds out and you can, like, they'll crawl on your arm if you want them to. And the aviary, they definitely will go on your head or your arm or hang out with you. It's a really lovely place. And if you're traveling with kids, definitely recommend bringing them there. Probably get, by the way, if you do go, you get a choice of a small or a large tin of food. Take the small one. Like, somehow I've never made it through the large one. And a good part of the time I've gone, somebody else is on their way out and hasn't finished the food and want to give you some. So definitely go with a smaller size. And then down the road, driving from the Parrot Place, is the entrance to Charlie's Rock. And I would say of the five waterfalls, the walk to get to it is perhaps the least, like, gorgeous in nature, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And also, if it's been raining, there is a section that can be quite slippery. So I don't recommend that if you have any walking issues. But if you don't, once you get past it, you end up at just this really quaint waterfall. And I think people swim in it. The rock formations are kind of cool. Of the five, I would say if you didn't have time, maybe skip that one. But if you have the time, definitely worth taking a look at. That's the waterfall things to do here. The other amazing things to do here, and again, if you are short on time, you're not going to be able to do everything, but Aroha Island is right nearby. It's only opened in the summer months. It's a very small island, and I think what's cool there is if you did have the time to stay overnight and you could book it, you might hear the kiwi birds and be able to actually possibly see one. It has that Brigadoon quality to me because it's only open part of the year, so I really enjoyed that.
And that's an echo park.
It's Kerikeri, but it's sort of like, what is the road?
No, I just meant it's an ecological preserve.
Oh, sorry, sorry. Yes, sorry. I'm thinking Echo Park, like ECHO, and I'm I don't know if it echoes. Sorry. It's really funny you say that. Being here so long, the accents on words, I'm now really confused. Like, I probably would have been listening for Eco Park.
Got it.
And just different words. Like, last night, I forgot the American word for coriander, which is cilantro. Mm-hmm. So it's very funny. The longer I'm here, the more I forget my, like, little American words like that. So there's tons of amazing things to see in Kerikeri. I would stay at the Farepuke subtropical accommodation while you're here. Is a beautiful place that you can stay if they have a cottage available for you. And eating at Maha Restaurant, which is one of probably the best restaurant in the area. And check out Marsden Estate if you like wine. They have some of my favorite wines in the area and a wonderful lunch. So I would make one of the days that you're here, you can use Kerikeri as a base and go out to the west coast, specifically Opononi and Omapuri. It looks like the way to pronounce them, that's how the correct pronunciation. When I first saw it, I thought it was Omapare and like Opanani or something, but they're about an hour and a half drive from Kerikeri. And oftentimes the weather on the west coast is different than the east coast. So also check the weather. It could be pouring in Kerikeri and beautiful and sunny on the west coast. What you want to see there are two sets of boulders and an amazing tree. So the Tane Mahute, I don't know if you've heard of that. It is the oldest kauri tree in all of New Zealand. It was alive at the time of Christ. And it is huge. It is amazing. So definitely want to stop off and just walk through. It's a little nature reserve, and you'll walk along a boardwalk, and you'll see this giant tree, and it's just amazing. So that's a definite thing to do. Opononi is known in 1955, I believe. There was a dolphin that was, like, playful and friendly and came and lived in the harbor, and they named her Opo. She unfortunately passed away in 1956, but I think that's where the town gets its fame. And they have a fish and chip shop that everyone goes to, so if you're there.
But unrelated to the passing of the dolphin.
Yes, yeah. They don't eat dolphin.
That was just put really close together there.
Sorry. Yes, good point. So the boulders are, a lot of people, if you look at a guidebook, are going to go to the Mulrocky boulders, which are in the South Island. And I've read a lot of reviews of disappointment. The Kutu boulders up here they're amazing. They're round boulders, are almost perfectly round, and they're just stunning. You do need to check the tide forecast because you can only see the Kutu boulders at low tide, which obviously happens twice a day. So make sure to time your visit appropriately and know that I thought logically the tide would, if low tide is at 2 p.m. today, I thought, so it'll be at like 2:30 or 3 p.m. tomorrow. Nope. It's like hours difference. So there are websites you can Google the tide. You have to get to the Kutu boulders in alignment with low tide. And when you do, for now, it doesn't have a lot of tourists. So if you came soon after the borders open, I would think it would be one of those little touristed locations where you walk along a beach and then you think, when I first got there, I was like, this is it. There were some round, little round boulders that were like up to my arm or something. I was like, well, that's interesting, but this is it. Keep walking and you get to these gigantic boulders. And it's just stunning scenery and the boulders are all along the beach and it's just a stunning view. So there's those boulders.
And for those who are geologists, these are a concretion. I thought they might be, so I looked it up because I'm familiar with seeing these in the Western U.S. in some places. And they're an interesting geological formation.
Speaking of interesting geological formations, the other one, the Wairere boulders, are, as I understand it, the only place in the world where it's basalt stone, okay, not limestone, where the rain has fluted, it's made fluting patterns in basalt, which cannot happen unless there's acid rain and the rock is in a position long enough for that acid rain to wash over it enough for that to happen.
Hmm.
The stones all started at the top of a hill, which was, it used to be a giant cowrie forest. And over time, they've rolled down, except for one, which is called a magic rock that's still at the top. And as they rolled down, they stayed in the same position for like 5,000 years at a time, which is what allowed the rain mixing with the cowrie tree soil, which is the acid, to wash over it. And I mean, it's unbelievable. So before this, I have to tell you, like, geology was not my main fascination, but that was amazing. And you can take a kayak and you can go out in the river and you can go in the water to see all of these sites. You can walk them. If you have kids, they have fairy houses and they've done some really creative painting and work with some of the stones. So it's really fun for kids too.
I don't know what a fairy house is. I mean, I can picture what one might look like, but I'm picturing something out of the Brothers Grimm. So what do you mean by a fairy house?
What they do is they just take the trees and they, okay, you just have to look. They'll have a painted fairy door.
Okay.
It's really cute. So, and it looks like fairies. You want to knock on the door and see if they're home. Like, so you have to go on this walk and find all of the little fairy doors and, like I said, painted rocks and stuff that are like animals or fun shapes and things. So I just recommend going in there and seeing it for yourself.
Okay.
And if you go on their website, the Wairere Boulder website, which is actually, I wrote a blog post about it on my blog. They have some pictures of it and they also have a Highland cow cattle on the premises. And you can also stay there overnight. It's a whole experience you can have there if you want. Or like I said, if you're limited on time, just go for the day and come back. So that's the West Coast I'd recommend, okay, and the Kerikeri area. And then the last piece up here to get to, of course, is Cape Rinya. That is about a 2.5 hour drive north of Kerry. So presuming you don't want to do a 5 hour round trip drive and fit all this in a day, I would recommend leaving Kerry and staying overnight in either Cooper's Beach or the Kerikeri Peninsula to break up the trip. And along your journey, what you want to stop and see, like quick stop in a town called Kaeo, spelled K-A-E-O. They've got a jandal fence. Jandals are flip-flops. I don't know where this started, but you have to see it. So you have to take a picture. It's a cute little town. And then you can stop off if you have guts at St. Paul's Rock, which is a volcano. And to hike up, the views from the top of this thing are like 360 views. They're stunning. However, there is a section of the climb up which is perpendicular. I had to have a friend push me up and help me down because I was terrified. There is a chain that helps you, but it's just a little bit terrifying. So if you aren't up for that, don't do that walk. But if you like that kind of thing, definitely worth it for the view. You must stop off in Manganui to do the Mahinapua Peninsula walking track. It is two hills. You'll walk up the first hill down and then up the second one. And again, it's just some stunning, stunning scenery and well worth the hike. And you probably need at least a couple hours to do that. And then day two, I would go up to Cape Reina, stopping at, you drive over the 90-mile beach if your car can handle it. And then you can do sandboarding.
Hang on a second. If your car can handle it.
I did a tour, which had those big tires that okay. could drive in sand, right? So make sure that you're like in a SUV or something. Check with the tour company that you get your car from, right? Otherwise, maybe don't do drive the beach. It's just kind of cool because it's called 90 Mile Beach. It's 90 miles of beach.
Well, and for those who aren't clear, who aren't looking at a map here, you are on the very tip of the very tip of the northern part of New Zealand.
Yep. Yes, exactly. And then you want to stop at the Kauri Tree Museum, which is actually part of the museum is inside the trunk of a dead Kauri tree. It's quite stunning. And Cape Reina, when you get there, you walk out to the lighthouse and very much feel like you're literally at the end of the earth. Because New Zealand, there are parts of it that there's just no, you can't see any other land masses. There are two, I'm trying to think, I think it's the Tasman Sea and the Pacific. There's like an ocean and a sea that converge right in front of the lighthouse. So it's just kind of neat to see the two bodies of water come together and make that line. I'm used to the sea breaking on the mm-hmm. shore, but it's like it breaks into each other in a straight line out to the ocean. So it's just a neat sight. It's also a sacred site to the Maori. So just a great thing to see.
And yes, you got the seas right.
Oh, good. Thank God. I'm like, I should know this. That would complete my like Kerikeri and west and north of Kerikeri, what to see. And from there, as you work your way from Kerikeri down to Whangarei, I would stop off in, if you can stay in Russell, which is the town that's across the water from Paihia. I would recommend that because it's just quaint and beautiful. And it sort of reminds me of maybe a laid back Hampton's Town, but without the sort of nobody here is uppity or anything. So it's just, you know, it's like super laid back. And Russell has some beautiful hiking trails as well. And there's the Pompelier House that you can visit. I think you did the Hole in the Rock tour, didn't you, from Paihia?
Yeah, I did.
So I don't know if you know, but if you do that tour and you don't see whales or dolphins, you get a free ticket to do the tour again.
Okay. I did not know that, but we did see, so.
I did not. And of course, I've been here long enough that I was able to use my ticket. I got my ticket before lockdown and used it again after lockdown. And when I told the skipper that I was there for the second time because I hadn't seen anything the first time, he said, if we don't see anything today, it's your fault. And we saw whales and dolphins, so it was
well,
great.
And let's just back up a bit here. So when you talk about the Hole in the Rock tour, we're now on a boat, and yes. we're going out into the bay, and you mentioned this at least once before, the Bay of Islands, that we're in this bay called the Bay of Islands that has, strangely enough,
yes.
a number of islands.
It does.
One of which has a hole in the rock. So that is the yes. hole in the rock. And so you tend to take a boat out to the hole in the rock, which is a hole in the rock. But along the way, there are opportunities to see and sometimes swim with dolphins. Now, this is free dolphins, not dolphins in captivity. So it's up to them, right? If you see dolphins and people are interested, they will stop the boat. They will get people in the water. And sometimes the dolphins feel like playing. And sometimes they don't. And that's yeah. entirely up to them.
And there's a pod, I think it's the bottlenose ones that are like more endangered. So mm-hmm. the boats aren't allowed to stop in the morning at that pod.
Okay.
Only in the afternoon. So sometimes the afternoon cruise might be better because they can actually stop and you can see the dolphins if you do see them.
So I was there like you're talking about in the winter, the New Zealand winter. And I'm told the cruise is a little better in the summer months or in yeah. other months. Rather than the winter, where it's a little rougher for one thing.
Definitely. And of course, and I should have mentioned too that, by the way, I mentioned Russell, but of course, getting there, you have to stop in Paihia. And I know you've been to Paihia before. Cute little town as well. a little bit more touristy, though. So that's why I'm saying if you can stay in Russell, it's really special. But Pahia is also lovely, as I think you know.
And is that where, I'm trying to remember this, where do the boats go to the Hole of Rock? Where do they leave from?
Pahia.
They do leave from Pahia. That's why I assumed from what you were saying.
And also the ferry. So if you did the Hole in the Rock tour, it includes free transit to Russell.
Oh,
so you can actually get off there, do the cruise, and on the way back, get off at Russell, come back the next day. So it's kind of nice that you can combine two things in one. And you get off at that, I can't pronounce it, but it's like the Ulupudu. It's like got a long name. You get off at an island and you get to hike for 45 minutes, which is in an island in the Bay of Islands, as you said.
Okay. Ulupukapuka.
That sounds
I'm going to just
like
say
it.
That's the right way to say it. Somewhere there is a New Zealand, a Kiwi who is listening to this, laughing at my pronunciation. But.
Yes. So, and that's a beautiful island. I've been lucky to do it twice. So I've seen the left and the right sides of the hike, and they're both equally beautiful, but I feel like you should see both or run if you're good at walking fast. So that's a beautiful stop. And then after you've spent, like I said, if you can do a day or two in the area, you want to go down to Whangarei. You'll stop off in Kawakawa, the town, right? So there's the tree I mentioned earlier, and now there's a town called Kawakawa, which is known for their Hunterwasser toilets. And so Hunterwasser is this German guy that was apparently really famous.
That out.
Do you know?
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really funny, by the way, in New Zealand, famous people, just it's not a big deal. It's just not the same as fame in America. So as a side note, a movie came out here within the last few months called James and Izzy. I don't know if you heard of it.
No.
So it's about a Maori man who is looking after his mother, who's turning 100 and planning her birthday. And we get to know the family through the 5 days before the birthday and all the planning. And it's really a great movie. So James was living in Kawakawa. And so I get this, I contacted him on Facebook and I was like, I love your movie. He and his mom drink whiskey. And I'm like, I'd love to come and grab a whiskey or a coffee with your mom. And he actually responded. And when I went to Kawakawa, we met for a cup of coffee. So like in America, I can't even imagine a movie star even responding. So that was lovely.
Okay. But you were going to, but you were going there for the toilets.
I was.
And you really mean toilets. You're talking about a public toilet.
I do mean a public toilet, which is pretty cool.
16 years, I believe this may be the first time on Amateur Traveler that someone has said, and one of the places you need to stop is this particular public toilet. So,
yay!
Congratulations for a first here.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's pretty elaborate. And they've recently built a museum right behind the toilet, so you can get the whole Hunterwasser story.
When you say it's really elaborate, so it's tile work and sculpture even, maybe? Fancy.
Glass.
Yeah.
Like different medium all mixed together to make your toilet experience like a work of art.
and yet functional. Okay.
Yes.
Because Friedenreich Hunterwasser was an architect and visual artist, I understand now.
Yes, exactly. And I don't think, I mean, in that same vein, there are new, they're calling them, I think, Hunterwasser toilets in Whangarei.
Okay.
They remind me more of a Gaudi building, and it's been interesting going back to Whangarei a year apart and seeing the toilets. I saw them at the beginning, and now they're almost done. And I want to go there because they look pretty intense. Like, they'd be really interesting toilets. So, one of the reasons I recommend Whangarei, not the only one. But
and before they had fancy toilets, they also had some historic significance as well.
Yeah, there's more to Whangarei than just the toilets.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Kawakawa, it's a tiny town. Go to see the toilets. Go to just be there. And then head over to the Tutukaka coast, which is you're literally just driving by the water. And it's not such a long drive. The issue is that the road is so curvy that you need to drive at about 15 kilometers an hour. So it will take you a long time because you have to drive slowly.
Okay.
Not because it's that long, but there's a couple of points where you should get out. There's this gorgeous beach. Honestly, I had to just pull the car over. I wasn't planning to. I was just like, this is so pretty. I'm just going to stop here and just take a moment. So there's this beach and then there's like a whale tip. I forget the name of it. There's something with whale in it where you can get off and just, you can walk just along the water. And it may even be from this beach that I'm mentioning. That's really pretty that you can pick up the walk. Again, depending on your timing, if you don't have a lot of time, you could also just drive from this beautiful beach to the next. There's like a very obvious pullout where you can do a little bit of walking because the road's really narrow, and then all of a sudden there's like room for you to park. So you might want to stop off there. And then the final stop off along the way would be Matapuri Bay, which again is just another, it's just a lovely beach just to sit for a moment, take in the beauty. And I found the powashells on the beach, little baby ones. So if you ever wanted the powashells here have that beautiful iridescent inside.
Okay. I don't know powashells.
Yeah,
P-A-U-A. They look like an abalone.
Yeah, and they make really good fritters. Sorry, I've eaten
them. Oh, okay, yes. So pawa is the Maori word, and in the U.S. or in Australia, it'd be abalone. Got it, okay.
Oh, okay.
And in the U.K., it's ormer, so I don't know what they're called.
Oh, okay, cool. So, and by the way, that fish place, the fish and chip shop without the dolphin in Opononi, I think they have pawa fritters and other things.
Okay.
And then once you get to Whangarei, I would recommend staying at least 2 days, if not three, because it's this place that when you first get there, you will say, why on earth did this woman recommend Whangarei? I don't know why I'm here. It looks like an industrial little town. Why am I here?
And where are the toilets? But
okay, there's the toilets. But in fact, there are a few major things to see there. One is there's a town basin, which is where like there's all these boats docked there that are gorgeous. There's a little clock museum, which, I mean, if you like clocks, go. If not, just look in from the outside window and you can see enough. But there's a sculpture trail and it's quite large. And that's where I mentioned Chris Booth. He did a Waka and Wave sculpture there in partnership with another artist. But if you walk around, it's the whole basin and waterfront, cross a bridge, go to the other side. It can take you a good hour or more. And there's tons of amazing sculptures. And then the other thing that's there is there are hikes that are gorgeous. The sculpture park, it's called the Hatea Loop Sculpture Park. So it's an actual loop that you take to see that.
Okay.
And then I did the Mount Parihaka walk. It was a bit long and it's uphill.
Both ways?
That's the thing here. I got to tell you, I feel like in New Zealand, like it's always uphill, even when it should be downhill. I feel like I'm always walking uphill and it's insane. But that must be why people here are in such great shape, because they're just doing a lot of walking. At the top of Mount Parihaka is this beautiful view of Whangarei, and there's a sculpture of a Maori, I think it's a Maori woman, that's it's a beautiful sculpture up there. And there is a cross, like if you get the sunlight correctly. And I put this in my blog post too, another blog post about Whangarei. The sun shines through this cross and it like glows red and it's absolutely beautiful. So that's a beautiful walk and that will take you, I mean, you'll be tired after that. So there's another walk, which I think is, unless you're really, really fit, you want to do these in two different days. Mm-hmm. You can walk from the center of town to the Quarry Arts Center. It's just all these different artists that do different medium and it's really neat to walk around. And from there, you can walk about 30 or 45 minutes to the Quarry Gardens. There's a cafe there where you can eat, and it's a lovely, lovely actual garden area. And there are more sculptures there, and that Chris Booth, again, has another sculpture there, among other artists as well. So it's just a beautiful area to see. And again, this is why I'm saying 2 to 3 days is great to get a glimpse. But if you were there longer, there's also the Whangarei Heads Beaches and Whangarei Falls. All things that you can do, but those first two walks are, and sitting at the town basin, like there's also, it's just beautiful even to eat there at night. It was a surprise to me because most Kiwis I've met when I said I was going to Whangarei were like, why? And then when I got there, and like I said, I found all these things to do and they're really beautiful. I feel like it's a very underrated town in my opinion. So that's where I would end my stay and probably then make my way back to Auckland and out.
Excellent. The only thing that you didn't cover that I had a chance to do when I was there that was up by when we were doing that trip into the Bay of Islands is the Waitangi Treaty Grounds.
Yes, forgot to mention that.
And that's a historically significant spot because that is where the Maori and the English basically formed a peace treaty. So this is the beginning of the nation of New Zealand.
Yeah, and the Waitangi, I know you covered it in another episode as well, but it's really, they have a Maori carver there, so you can learn all about the significance of the kuru, the loops. There's significance in each aspect of the carving, and watching them do that is pretty cool. Did you get a guide when you went to Waitangi?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, because they're fascinating and they're hilarious. And they talk about the boats. And did you know that Princess Di visited there and they actually took her out in one of those long boats?
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the Maori canoes.
Yes.
War canoes. They're big.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up because, yes, Waitangi is a must-see when you're here. It's a really amazing place.
So, and I said that we have done other episodes of Amateur Traveler on even on the North Island. If you want a companion episode to this, if you have more time, you can do this section. And then the trip that I did sort of goes as far north as there and then goes further south and does more of the rest of the island, including the Coromandel Peninsula and Hobbiton and places like that. So go listen to that episode. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. We've got at least three shows, I think, that cover the North Island. So excellent. I want to do some wrap-up questions, but before I do, Heather, anything else that somebody needs to know before they head to the northern part of the North Island?
Wow. I think I've pretty much covered it. But oh, bring layers, and if you're here in the rainy season, just bring an umbrella out with you. Even if it's a gorgeous, sunny, perfect blue sky day, bring an umbrella with you because the weather changes fast up here.
Well, and you mentioned when you're in this area, I was really surprised when you said that there was snow, because what I found having spent a couple weeks in North Island was New Zealand winter in the North Island reminded me of California winter, which is to say not winter.
So it's very true.
For those of you who have real winter, that is, you've got the wrong mental picture. That is not what we're talking about here.
There was an Arctic blast, and with the climate change happening, so it's very rare that up here gets snow, but apparently the West Coast, again, which is more unruly weather, was getting some snow.
But a very green area, so obviously they get a fair amount of rain. Unlike where I live, which is on fire. So obviously layers are one of the reasons you're bringing that is not just for the cold, but also for the wet.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. Couple wrap-up questions. You were standing in the prettiest spot in the North Country. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
That's a tough question. I would say one spot that was beautiful that I actually forgot to mention was Metowrie Bay.
Okay.
Which is also gorgeous. Do you know the Rainbow Warrior, the Greenpeace ship?
Greenpeace ship, yeah.
Yeah, it's buried right by in Metowrie Bay, and you can actually scuba dive and see it if that's your fancy. But the view from across the bay at Metowrie Bay, where there's another Chris Booth sculpture that commemorates, it actually uses the propeller from the ship. That view was probably one of my first stunning views, but the problem I have when you ask me that question is one, Marsden, by the way, Marsden Cross, looking out at the water, another stunning view that's right near Kerikeri. Everything here is like, I could tell you, this is the most beautiful spot I've ever seen. And that's the thing about New Zealand. Like, I'll say that. And then tomorrow I'll go somewhere else and be like, this is the most beautiful place I've ever seen. So I don't know how
place.
To answer that with one thing. It really is.
Excellent. Well, it's really one of the reasons I do this show, honestly, is that somebody gave me a hard time last week for being a real fan of California, which is where I live. But obviously, if I was such a fan, I wouldn't go to all these other places and really enjoy them. That includes domestic, international, and everything. There's some amazing places in this world.
There are.
One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in New Zealand.
You know what? One thing I love is the barefoot walking. When I first came here, I thought people didn't have enough money to afford shoes. And now I take my shoes off as often as possible. And so I just laugh when I'm at the New World supermarket. I still laugh when somebody's like barefoot in the supermarket. I think that is the coolest, naughtiest thing ever. And I've done it once because it just feels so naughty and so fun.
And it's not against the rules there, which it would be here?
No, you can go to the restaurants barefoot. You can go like they want you to be barefoot because you're more connected to nature. It's beautiful.
Interesting. Okay. Well, restaurants, you could probably get away with it here, but grocery store, definitely not allowed. So.
Yeah. I grew up in New York. Like there's glass everywhere. So I mean, it's a whole different experience.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize the Northlands in three words, what three words are you going to use?
Warm.
Okay.
Majestic. I'm trying to find this word it's not peaceful. It's not, it's like expansive. I'd say expansive.
Okay, excellent. And our guest again has been Heather Markell from heatherbegins.com. And Heather, if we're going to send people over to heatherbegins.com, first of all, begins what? what did Heather begin? And will she ever finish?
Yeah. So I began my life I'd say at 2018. I quit my job at the end of 2017 and was planning 3 to 6 months of traveling the world. And I have been a nomad ever since. And I've really begun finding myself, being myself, and discovering the world in the process. So that's what I began.
Excellent. And if we wanted to send people to your best post on New Zealand, where are we going to send them?
Well, I would recommend actually just going to my New Zealand blog post page, which has all of the posts, but definitely check out my posts on Kerikeri and the boulders, the Kutu Wairere boulders and Whangarei that I've mentioned in this interview.
Excellent. Well, and the pictures that we've been seeing, for those of you who know to look for pictures in this episode, some of those are going to be Heather's pictures, I imagine. Heather, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for New Zealand.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
I'd like to thank the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler. They get the show a little early, and we also have a monthly Zoom call, which turned into an episode recently. If you're interested in supporting Amateur Traveler, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I got a couple other reviews recently. One was from TechRenut 1996. Good show, good travel show, but can be a little hard to pay attention to some weeks. I know, I feel the same way. Overall, can't complain and still listening every week. Nick00008 said, good on the ears. Chris's voice is soft but crisp. He tells the story and the facts you need to know. His preparation is excellent. Yes, I'm a fan. Thanks for some great content and interviews from a friendly podcaster on travel who aspires to this level. Thanks so much, Nick. Send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com because I'm not sure which Nick you are and if I know about you. Next week, I'm taking the week off because one of the two editors of the show, who happens to also be my son, is getting married. So that's where I will be. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.